Well, good evening, everybody. I know we're going to start at 7 o'clock. Just being true to Fireside time, let's give folks a few extra minutes to dial in. We've got about 50% of the folks signed up, maybe actually just a little bit less. So my guess is folks are making their way back from work or getting to their computers, et cetera. So we'll start up here in about 4 or 5 minutes. So bear with us.
Good evening, everybody. This is Jim Boyle. We did send everyone a copy by PDF of the PowerPoint presentation that you see for those of you that are on the web is on the screen. For those of you that have just called in, if you haven't had an opportunity to do so and you want to follow along as we go through some of the visuals here to track to some of the things we're going to talk about, please take some time to get that PDF. It was sent to the email address that you used when you registered for the telephone conference.
Okay. Thank you guys for bearing with us here. I do see some folks asking questions, which is wonderful. So this is Mark Guidi, current executive director. Let me just take a moment up front to just talk through a little bit of logistics, then I'll turn it over to Brother Boyle to get into the heart of the matter. So certainly for folks that are online, there's a couple of ways to ask questions. The broader presentation is probably going to take 25, 30 minutes, and then we've left large swaths of time for Q&A. There's really a couple of ways to do the questions. Some of you have already figured it out, but on your computer, there's a little pop-up panel. One of those gray bars says questions. So you can type in a question, and I will strive to get those answered, or we will put them to the appropriate person. So that's option number one, do it through the GoToWebinar service. Option number two is if that's not convenient or you're on the phone and not logged into the online webinar, that's fine. Just send me an email. My email address, I think most folks know it at this point, but it's mag@phikappasi.com. And we've done this in the past. It's a little kludgy, but it does work. So just send me an email, mag@phikappasi.com. And again, I'll either address the question or try to pose it to the group for a broader answer. And if neither of those work and there's still questions at the end, send me an email when you can. We're going to produce an FAQ to address any questions that did not get answered, and just frankly codify the ones that did. So there you go. With that, let me turn it over to our brother SWGP, Brother Boyle.
Thank you, Mark, and certainly appreciate everybody making time tonight for this important phone call. Got some really critical things to talk about. And as we work through the PowerPoint, we get into some of the nuts and bolts of what's happening within our Greek Life organization communities. I hope you'll be open-minded about some of the challenges that the Executive Council is facing, our staff are facing, certainly our students are facing, and all of that is driving what I call a WIP, a work-in-progress dialogue about some very significant and serious issues. The primary point of this call and the issues we're going to talk about are going to rotate around what I call new member integration or pledgeship, for those of you who use that term, and alcohol. And then the interaction between those two and some of the crises that it is causing for our organizations. So a couple of quick things logistically to add to what Mark said. We are recording the call, so this will be available for people to listen to at a later date. I certainly encourage you to share this and ask your team leadership at the chapter level, at the Alumni Association level, to listen to the webinar if they are not able to join tonight. And clearly the FAQs will try to address some of the concerns and thoughts, issues that other people raise downline. So Beth, if I can get you to go to the next slide. Real quick, I'm gonna break the call into three different parts here. One is gonna talk about background, just to set the stage for where we're at as an organization on those particular topics. The second part will be to present concerns and issues that we're facing. And the third part, we'll talk about the Executive Council direction and solutions. Just as an aside to all this, the Executive Council did have an emergency meeting last month in Indianapolis on the 17th and 18th of December to talk through these very issues with a group of folks that we invited to come together to be a part of that dialogue. So we're going to work through this PowerPoint. It's going to be available online for those that are on the web. I mentioned earlier, for those that are by telephone, I hope you've had a chance to pull that PDF down so you can follow along as we move through this. It's tracking a lot to what was circulated to our chapter leadership, both undergraduate and alumni, last week. And it will also mirror in many ways what will be discussed, at least in part, during the upcoming regional officer training sessions, which are going to occur over the next 4 weeks, starting on this weekend. So next slide, Beth. I want to talk about branding real quick. So moving pretty quickly, this dates back obviously to 2014, and the way that our organization was viewed through the public lens based on what occurred at UVA. Absolutely true that that was a turned out to be a false story, but nevertheless, it was the narrative that the public heard about for over a year associated with our brand. And all you have to do is go online and type in, you know, Phi Kappa Psi, UVA, and a lot of this information still pops up. Next slide. You with me, Beth? Uh, 2016, this is last year. This is the issue that faced us at Creighton University. This is what the public heard about at that point in time. Very significant issue. This dealt with an assault by one of our then new members against a young lady with a essentially a hunting knife where he slashed her. And he's come back and said that that was based on some hazing that he had experienced as a new member. Next slide. For us, this is as of last semester. This is the branding that we now face. This is a young man by the name of Matthew Ellis, who was a new member at our chapter at Texas State University in San Marcos, who died. And we still are awaiting a lot of the investigation to land on that issue. But nevertheless, it is a death. It is a very serious issue. We take it very seriously. It's tragic. Nothing was more difficult in my experience as national president than to have to speak to Matthew's mother about this. Very difficult moment. Next slide. This is the branding that came out in the University of Utah's campus newspaper shortly after Matthew passed away. What's concerning about this for me is that Phi Kappa Psi has plans to expand to this campus in 2019. And this is already the way that the University of Utah's campus newspaper views us. In light of the death of Matthew, this is what they're talking about. And so it's a part of who we are now, and it's a part of what we need to discuss. I do want to apologize to Sigma Chi because they were unfortunately flagged in this photograph and this article, and they didn't have anything to do with our incident at Texas State. Next slide. And then, of course, the overarching issue deals with what we're facing at Penn State. The issue that we're dealing with at Penn State is related to the death of a young man by the name of Timothy Piazza. Many of you have read about this. It is driving an incredible amount of dialogue at the highest levels of campus administrations. One of the things that is out there, Penn State and its president are driving a lot of this dialogue. They're highly engaged in this issue. There has been an invitation extended by the president of Penn State University to a number of different, frankly, it's to anyone who wants to come this April within the college administrations to dialogue about how campus administrations are going to administer and oversee and supervise fraternity organizations on their campus to ensure that no other campus has to experience what Penn State has experienced. We don't know what that's going to look like. We have not seen an invitation extended to the fraternity organizations, either individually or through the National Interfraternity Conference. But you don't have to go very far. If you read online, the president of Penn State has already outlined in many ways some of the expectations that Penn State has for the way that fraternities will function at the Penn State campus. And it's not too much of a leap to understand that that is going to be adopted and mirrored on other campuses. I fully expect that the Big Ten schools are going to follow very closely what is happening at Penn State. We're seeing that already materialize at Indiana, materialize at Ohio State, materialize at Illinois. So it's very much an ongoing a concern because we've got these external forces largely adopting a position that they are going to tell us how to function rather than allowing us to determine how we're going to function. Next slide. similar branding at Louisiana State at the beginning of this year. Next slide. Very similar situation at Florida State as well. An interesting read, if you want to go online, is the grand jury, a report that came out of the Florida State investigation. It's a very sober reading for what is happening with regard to grand jury involvement and prosecutorial involvement in these issues. We saw the same thing at Penn State. So that's very much the background for where we're at right now. It's highly concerning. If you go to the next slide, the trigger point, the inflection point for Phi Kappa Psi, in my opinion, is what has happened at Texas State. It's put us in that same bucket, more so than we were beforehand, because we're a part of that dialogue of four deaths since the beginning of this academic year. The statement at the top of that is what I wrote in my report to the Executive Council last October. My personal opinion is that that statement now appears to be too late. We're a little bit in reaction mode more than in proactive mode, where I was hoping we would be, and you could certainly substitute Texas State for Penn State in that statement. It's my strong belief that we need to take and make every effort to be in control of our own destiny, at least in part, and that we need to demonstrate the courage and the willingness to make difficult decisions and discuss difficult topics that, having been around the national organization for 30 years, I'm certainly aware that this isn't the first time this dialogue has occurred. But I think it's time for us to make some significant policy shifts in the way that we operate as an organization, because if we're not prepared to do that on our own, gentlemen, I'm really afraid we're going to see it imposed upon us from outside forces, and I'm not sure we're ready to address it when we're being told what to do. And I think if we fail, frankly, our host institutions and our insurance companies, if not the courts, are going to be the ones that dictate how we react. And you'll see here the New York Times article from last month talks about the invitation I spoke about earlier from the president of Penn State. So that's the background information. I want to turn it over to Mark real quick to talk about a few things that are happening within the National Interfraternity Conference world, because the NIC is 100% engaged in this exact same dialogue. Mark?
Thanks, Jim. So it's interesting. This last weekend, the NIC hosted their first training program weekend that had 65 presidents of the various IFCs from around the country. And it was great. So a few of us execs got to go. We're invited to come out and work with them as just kind of coaching and mentoring and whatnot. And part of the dialogue we got into in one of the groups I was working with at the time was very, very interesting. And it really had to do with talking about the thought process that went through how undergraduates processed somebody who was so highly intoxicated, be it with alcohol or other substances, and that what to me seemed like a pretty straightforward balancing act between, do I call an ambulance or not, right? If somebody's that bad, you call the ambulance, worry about other stuff later. The equation and the mindset was very interesting. In that the overarching desire to preserve the chapter's integrity and try to work through this on their own versus reaching out even when there was potentially a real crisis was quite surprising. I mean, it's also fair to say that it's very difficult to put undergraduates into to try to judge the state of another undergraduate who's potentially consumed too much of a substance. And so it was a wonderful, fascinating discussion that when we talk about this from the legal perspective and what other what universities are doing, all the things that Jim just went through, it's quite interesting because as you know, sober, mature adults, that's one conversation. It's a different conversation on the ground in there. And I'm probably not saying anything that some of our alumni advisors don't already know, but it is something we're going to have to overcome because it's starting to really be a substantial headwind to us making progress. So, for example, coming out of the FSU tragedy, ABC News, the network ABC News, was on site doing a story, obviously, and they captured this video. Let me just play this video for you here real quick. You'll need to unmute your computer. Hold on. So that whole concept of, we're not suspended, you're suspended. Well, that caught on. You can now buy fine clothing lines with that on there through various websites and whatnot, which unfortunately our detractors are using against us in the sense that they're using these as demonstrable events that claim we don't get it. We as the Greek Life Organization. And frankly, as we're talking through this, it is lost on the vast majority of people. It is irrelevant whether we're Phi Kappa Psi, Sigma Nu, Beta Theta Pi, Kappa Alpha. It doesn't matter. We're all lumped in this together. And so that's where the NIC is trying to engage, because the solution here must be a group solution. Particularly as we work through some of the social media challenges, right? I'll just give you one, then I'll stop channeling my doing my best Judd Horace act here, which is a pale comparison. But, chapter GPs can literally be in a chapter meeting talking about all the things that they should be doing, where and they'll have two or three different subgroups within the chapter, real-time messaging through GroupMe or WhatsApp or instant messaging, whatever they're using, going in completely different directions. It's a really tough job right now to be a chapter president and to toe the line of trying to transform the organization. That's part of what we're going to have to work through organizationally if we're going to be successful in navigating this. And, to Jim's point, make sure that we are controlling our destiny moving forward versus it being handed to us. So a little bit of insight there from where things are on the NIC side. Jim, back.
Thanks, Mark. That Judd mentioned when we had this similar conversation at our meeting last month is that we're not suspended, you're suspended message that came out of the Florida State death. What the grand jury report talked about there is that young man that died with a blood alcohol level of nearly 0.50. Died in a room with over 200 people in it while he was dying. And within 72 hours of that happening and the national organization suspending the chapter and it sort of driving this we're not suspended, you're suspended reaction, over 50,000 people had liked that message on social media. And within a week is when you saw that morph itself into the clothing and morph itself into other places, hashtags and whatnot. I'll give you an example for Phi Kappa Psi. When we recently suspended our chapter at Loyola University in Louisiana for hazing, the response we got from the undergraduates, the very last line of the response of our notice of suspension of the chapter said, "We're not suspended, you're suspended." So you've got this constant group think that's going on out there, and to Mark's point, social media and the students' use of social media and their cell phones to dialogue about these issues, all of that is happening around the efforts of the national organization and the host institutions and everyone else to try and teach and educate and coach in the right way. We've got to figure out together a way to balance what is happening with the undergraduate world and what is happening with the adult oversight, because it's not what's going on when we're around It's what's going on when we're not there and what they're saying behind closed doors and through their GroupMe conversations and the things they're actually organizing around what we're trying to coach them. And that is a huge challenge for us right now. So I want to turn it over to Shannon. He's got some couple things to talk about what the impact has been for Phi Kappa Psi of some of these issues. Shannon.
Thanks, Jim, and good evening, everyone. And I really appreciate everybody participating tonight.
Beth, you know, you need to get, real quick, Shannon. Beth, you need to get to slide 11. There you go.
You know, the impact that the current environment is having on not only Phi Psi but all fraternities, particularly around the country. I mean, we hear about the headline incidents that involve deaths, but there are plenty of other hazing incidents specifically that are occurring around the country. And universities, I think particularly, have said we've had enough. And they're just not going to allow this kind of behavior to go on anymore. Since 2013, you'll see on the slide in front of you, we've had 18 chapters that have closed in that time frame. And I can tell you that there are two additional chapters, Vanderbilt, will be closing, and also Bowling Green. And both of those will be added to this list of 18 that will then go to 20. And you see that the vast majority of these incidents involve hazing. Hazing and substance abuse and misuse are the two common denominators of nearly every incident that our standards team deals with. And you'll see the aggregate effect that's had on our membership. Those are 1,003 undergraduate members that we lost from our roles, and 375 new members that we lost from our roles. And that doesn't include the number of years since then that we would have maintained membership levels similar to those from those chapters. So you can see the huge impact that it's having on us specifically. Next slide, please. Beyond the closures, we have some active investigations that now have dropped from 6 to 4 because Tennessee Delta and Ohio Zeta have moved to the closure list. We have investigations at Alabama, Ohio State, Johns Hopkins, and Texas Tech. Next slide, please. In addition, as you know, a lot of universities have instituted moratoriums on Greek activities, and there's a listing of the various universities that we're aware of that right now that have issued formal moratoriums. I can also tell you that there are a number of universities that have severely limited Greek activity. And so while it may not be a full-fledged moratorium, there is a big movement to limit Greek activities on university campuses right now. It's something that reaches not only our chapters and our host institutions, but also goes into the congressional and political environment. Next slide, please. Many of you may have heard of the REACH Act, which has been introduced in Congress, that will require all universities to disclose hazing incidents and other disciplinary actions against fraternities and sororities. And again, this really is coming from law enforcement, from host institutions, from political leaders that see a system that's broken. And one of the really disturbing trends that we're seeing in the litigation standpoint is that plaintiffs' attorneys have evolved in their in the way they bring these cases, and they are beginning to bring cases based on fraud. And the fraud against the university and against the local chapter and even against the national fraternity is that you painted a public picture of how wonderful and great your organization was. And university, you talked about what a great compliment to student life that Greek organizations were. Yet you knew that your chapter, your organization, had been under investigation for hazing, for alcohol abuse, for sexual misconduct, and you withheld that information. And so there have been a number of plaintiffs' attorneys that have begun to make cases based on a fraudulent misrepresentation of your organization. Now, that's critical for some practical reasons as well. First of all, that's uninsured. If fraud is involved, there is absolutely zero insurance coverage for an allegation of fraud. Second of all, if there are damages awarded, those are treble damages, which can add up very quickly. You're also seeing in the grand jury reports, you're seeing criminal charges being brought, a number of states are reviewing their state laws on hazing. The grand juries are demanding that state prosecutors and state elected officials begin to take this more seriously and bring prosecutions. We've had recently, for the first time that anyone can remember, a national fraternity, Pi Delta Psi fraternity, that was criminally convicted for a hazing death in Pennsylvania. Now, you may have seen that in the paper recently. And they were issued criminal sanctions of around $150,000 as a national organization. You're beginning to see local prosecutors, because this is such a hot topic issue, you're beginning to see local prosecutors bring criminal charges, not only against the individual participants, but also against the organizations themselves and the officers of the various organizations involved. And so the landscape is changing dramatically in these areas. So at this point, I'll turn it back over to Jim to talk a little bit more about some of the ways that FASA is working to address these issues.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you, Shannon. Beth, next slide. So the way the fraternity has tackled virtually all of the initiatives that we have addressed over the last 2.5 years, or 3 years plus or minus, is through a lens that I call 3P2E. And this is it right here: philosophy, policy, procedure, education, enforcement. You may recall in the last Shield article that I wrote, I talked about the philosophy as we kind of distill that down. But what we're really tackling now with regard to the hazing and the alcohol is at the policy level. And then the key is tackling policies that are not adequate. And the changes from those then drive alterations to the other parts of the model with regard to new member integration and alcohol. Okay. So as we go through the rest of these slides, please keep this model in mind, because that's the backdrop. Next slide, please. I think there are three significant impacts demand the attentive and introspective analysis. Next slide. And those are the three: Matthew Ellis, Luke Gabbert, the Creighton individual, Teresa Spagna, the victim of the Creighton incident, Luke Gabbert, who is a young man who died at our chapter at Ohio Wesleyan, Matthew Ellis, the young man that died at Texas State. Next slide. financially, this issue is hitting us really hard. Right now, we're looking at, just based on the figures that Shannon ran past you on the loss of the 18 plus two chapters now, so this number will go up, nearly $2 million in revenue impacts, which excludes the impacts on house corporations for losing the membership that is supporting the chapter house operations. The surges in the insurance contributions we've had over, next slide, please. We've had almost $350,000 in additional requirements for what we call SIR set-asides. That's based on our insurance program through FRMT. There's a formula that FRMT uses for determining potential future loss. And based on that formula, FRMT requires a member organization to set aside insurance monies. They're held in trust, so they're really our dollars. They haven't been spent, but they're held in trust, and it's operating capital that is essentially locked up, and sometimes for years, depending on the severity of the issue that the SIR requirement relates to, and they run the formula every year. So in the last 2 years, we've set aside $350,000 additional dollars in our SIR reserve, which comes out of operating capital. We've also seen a fee increase on our liability insurance since 2015 of nearly 40%. Next slide. So my personal opinion is that the systemic breakdown for Phi Kappa Psi really starts at the alumni level. And the reason I say that is that external forces are going to drive expectations for aggressive levels of alumni oversight. Whether that's at the host institution level or the insurance carrier issue or the public level. The April meeting of university presidents and what that conference will likely deliver is highly significant to us. I don't know what that report's going to say. We'll know. Hopefully we'll know by GAC, but I'm telling you right now, every indication that I've read, every conversation I've had with my peers and other organizations, the NIC folks and others that are close to this pulse, is that we are going to get directives coming down from university presidents and administrators that is going to substantially alter the landscape in which we operate. So while we can train and educate at the undergraduate level, and we'll do that, we have to educate and certify at the alumni level and build expectations for alumni oversight that is significantly different than what we're doing right now. It's a different model. It's going to necessitate alumni support, buy-in, and build out. And it's not enough for us any longer to demand that the headquarters try to manage 100 plus chapters and colonies 24/7, 365 from Indianapolis, when we're trying to also oversee 35 different state regulatory landscapes and over 100 plus campus regulatory landscapes. We simply don't have the bandwidth to do it. So we're going to have to figure out a way to do that at the local level. Next slide. Our claims history is really dictating a lot of this change. Misuse of alcohol is a common denominator to nearly all of our insurance claims. Next slide. What we have right now is underage consumption, whether that's driven by force or peer pressure or rite of passage expectations, it's a core concern. And I think we're asking far too much of our undergraduates to make the right decisions in times of crises. It demands instead adult leadership and oversight. Next slide. I want you to know that this is a very difficult conversation for me. It was a difficult conversation to have at our meeting in Indianapolis because I read what our most vocal critics say about us. And this is an article that appeared in The Atlantic back in November. And I fear that we're simply doing exactly what this author's scripting. For those of you that are familiar with this article and the author, she has been a vocal critic of our organizations for a very long time. And a lot of what she says about us, frankly, is pretty right and true. So it's difficult to sit and have a conversation about what we're going to change unless we're absolutely serious about making those changes. Otherwise, we simply play to her criticism that we'll announce reforms that look significant to anyone outside and we'll go back to business as usual. Next slide. So my finishing comment here is that we're not wasting our time on simply a period of reflection, that we're truly squarely going to address these issues, engage not in window dressing or systemic improvements. My expectation is we are determined and encouraged, and that we'll do so regardless of the headwinds and the pushback or the efforts that may come from outside or even within our own ranks to dilute and dismantle what we're trying to accomplish here. So I'm going to turn it back to Shannon. He's going to talk about some of the discussion topics that we had at our meeting in December, and then we'll move into a Q&A. Shannon?
Thanks, Jim. Next slide, Beth. You know, there aren't any simple answers to this, and there's no one magic bullet that's going to solve the issues that we're facing. But I do want to touch on some things that we are working on. Obviously, we have made a large commitment in the last couple of years to build out programming for our undergraduate and alumni volunteers. We built up 10% over 2016 last year, and we'll build up another 5% more over last year for this year. And our programming is critical to be in front of our student leaders to help program and inform. And as an example, we will be in front of over 900 undergraduates in the next 4 weeks with our regional officer training. And we found that that's a great opportunity to be in front of the leaders of the chapter. But of course, programming certainly requires funding. I've seen some of the questions already that, okay, well, how do we pay for this? It is mission critical that we are able to pay for this and find ways to pay for it. The Endowment Fund has been a very good partner in 2017 with the grants that they provided us for funding for our programs. They provided in calendar year 2017 just shy of $600,000 in funding to help us get in front of our undergraduate brothers. We're going to do more with our alumni programming as well, and our chapter advisor and volunteer training to help on the local level, because that's really where the rubber meets the road, and that's really where you're going to be able to affect the change. Is at the local level. One of the things that I think we have to make an urgent case for, and I appreciate everyone who joined tonight, but we have fewer than 100 people that have joined this call tonight. I think we have to sound the alarms that I don't think I'm being melodramatic in saying that we are at a critical point in the future of fraternities in this country, and it's not just Phi Psi. And I would expect that there will be some fraternities that really flounder and diminish in impact, and there will be some that will survive, because I believe in fraternity, and I believe in the mission of fraternities. And so there will be some that survive, but we can't make excuses for and allow ourselves to be the ones that flounder because we are making excuses. It's time for us as leaders to step up in our organizations and find the funding to help us move the organization forward. But I will tell you this, that I also don't believe that this is simply something that you can program your way out of. I think that any of you that have been involved in corporate America have probably sat through sexual harassment training in your workplace that was mandated by your company. Yet we see in the news recently all of the incidents of high-profile sexual harassment claims that are going on in the country. So obviously the programming wasn't working in all of those companies. And I think the same thing is true with hazing and alcohol use and drug use and abuse in our chapters. I think there are a number of members that will sit through the training because that's what they're required to do, but it has no real impact on them. So I think we have to look at fundamental changes to fraternity and how we do fraternity. Next slide, please. And the next slide. I'm sorry, I'm talked through that slide. So at our executive council meeting in December, we talked about alcohol management and pledging as a foundational part of the Phi Psi experience. And Good Samaritan or amnesty policies, alcohol or substance and substance-free housing, talked about the REACH Act, chapter advisory team structures and models. And frankly, we even discussed the unit rule as to whether it still had prospective value within Phi Kappa Psi. So next slide, please. I don't think that we're going to be able to slow walk a lot of these solutions and a lot of this dialogue because college administrators, our insurance carriers, prosecutors and grand juries and legislators are already mandating and demanding change. You know, as someone who's been a former attorney general and has been heavily involved in the constitution, bylaws, and rules of the fraternity, I can tell you that I don't want to stand in front of a jury trying to make a defense that we didn't act because we had to wait 2 years for our biannual convention to make changes within our organization. So this dialogue has got to be a continuing dialogue. We at our executive council meeting in December, we expanded the number of people that were there. And through this telephone call tonight and other efforts that we're going to be making in the next few months, we will be trying to expand the dialogue among the stakeholders so that we can get some well-reasoned, thought-out decisions. But the status quo is not going to be acceptable anymore, in my opinion. So we at our executive council meeting, we did initiate some first stage policy changes as kind of immediate steps that we will address. The first being that any new member that was taken during the fall semester, this past fall semester, if they are otherwise eligible for initiation, they must be initiated within 1 week of returning to campus for the winter quarter or spring semester based on what your campus is. Any new member class that's taken in the spring must be initiated within 7 weeks of the formal pledging ceremony. And must follow the fraternity's standard new member education program. We are reasserting our position again that no alcohol can be involved in any new member event, including a moratorium on any alcohol events within 48 hours before or after any new member event. What we find statistically is that there are three events within the pledgeship period where most all of these incidents are occurring, one being the bid night process, the next being the Big Brother reveal night, and the third one being the initiation ceremony itself. Alcohol involved in those events is clearly in contravention of our policies and also our insurance requirements. And then tighter controls on alcohol consumption associated with our chapter houses and chapter events. alcohol only permitted in the private living quarters of members of the legal drinking age. Consumption of alcohol only in common spaces during an official social event, and the prohibition of alcohol above 15% alcohol content can only be present if served by a licensed third-party vendor. Now, we didn't just come up with these on our own. I will say that these are the three basic primary points of the NIC's new policy on alcohol that they adopted earlier this fall. And finally, let me say one other thing about the hard alcohol. What we've also found in the cases, we have some statistical information that shows the blood alcohol content of a number of the victims that have died in these cases in the last 8 to 10 years. And you would be shocked and blown away at how high some of the blood alcohol content has been in these deaths. And so what we know is that the hard alcohol is what is killing fraternity members. And that associated with the hazing, and in some cases there's evidence of other illegal or prescribed drug use and association with that. But that's what's killing our members, and so we have to address those issues. And finally, we made a formal endorsement as the fraternity of the REACH Act. That we talked about earlier. Some of the things that I want us to continue to dialogue on, and the Executive Council has agreed that we will continue the dialogue on this, are how do we better train, inform, and have accountable chapter advisory teams. And we've talked about the concept of regional chapter advisory oversight as well. And then I think that we have to take a hard look at whether the period of pledgeship is appropriate anymore for our organizations. And I also believe with that we need to consider whether the unit rule is still appropriate for our organization in today's environment. So will we ever be able to eliminate hazing and alcohol abuse and drug abuse and misuse? No, I'm not dumb enough to think that. But I certainly know that we need to address some fundamental practices within our organization that can help reduce the likelihood of those events, the severity of those events. And along with all of this, too, I think we have to make a recommitment to why we joined a fraternity and seeking out like-minded men. Who want something more out of their fraternity and college experience than the social aspects of the fraternity. So with that, I will end my comments.
Fantastic. Thank you, Shannon. And I think one last comment, I want to open up to questions. We've got quite a few that have been posted online, and we'll get to those. And for those of you that have called in too, Mark's giving you a way to relay questions by telephone or email. One of the things that is certainly driving my concern with these issues relates to the criminal side of this. So let's take the Penn State situation with Beta Theta Pi. You have 18 individuals indicted in Pennsylvania right now. Members of Beta Theta Pi's chapter at Penn State, 12 of whom face charges of involuntary manslaughter, which carries a prison sentence of between 10 and 20 years. You've got another 6 facing either obstruction of justice charges or doctoring or trying to eliminate the video that existed for their in-chapter house camera system, or providing alcohol to minors. It's almost a certainty, given the grand jury report that issued in Tallahassee, that criminal charges will be filed with regard to the death that occurred at Florida State. Haven't heard anything about what might happen at LSU, and pardon my French, I'm scared shitless of what's going to happen in Hayes County, Texas, for our young men who are members of Texas State, Texas Gamma. You had a national organization indicted for hazing in Houston for an incident that occurred 2 years ago that did not involve a death. I have no idea how that might translate to what could possibly happen in Hayes County, Texas, with regard to a student who did die. The major change in the sea that has occurred in the last 18 months is the involvement of grand juries and prosecutors in changing and addressing the way that society, the public, is demanding fraternity organizations function on campus. That is a term, I've never seen that before. So it's got me, frankly, quite nervous about what the impact of those kinds of decisions could be for our young men who are taking risks every single day, right? And those that are addressing these issues seriously. You certainly have organizations that have already decided to move away from pledgeship entirely. You have organizations that have moved to alcohol-free housing. Those are part of our dialogue. I can tell you one of the things the executive council is highly pursuing right now, and this will likely land quickly, is what we call chapter report cards, where a chapter's disciplinary history and a chapter's academic performance, that's going to be published. We'll put that out there for public digestion, because we can't afford the risk of not reporting that information given the fraud lawsuits that are out there. So it's changing the entire way that we address this. Shannon and Mark and I are headed to a conference tomorrow in Tucson, and I fully expect part of that conference will deal with the insurance carrier and our claims processor, Holmes Murphy, will be there. That there's going to be a dialogue had about how the insurance carriers are now addressing these issues and the kinds of rules and expectations they're going to impose on those entities like FICAP PSI that are part of the FRMT insurance group. So I've seen a couple of questions come through and say, well, let's wait till the GAC and talk about all this stuff. Agreed. That's totally fair to talk about this next summer or this summer. But I'm asking each one of you to get off this mindset that the only type of change in management oversight of the organization can only occur in a four-day conference held every 2 years. Because if that's the approach we're going to take as an organization, I fear for what that's going to mean for the leadership of the organization and for the students in particular. You're vapor locked the decision making. And the risks are very significant to the organization and to the individuals that are involved. So that's my sermon. I want to move on to some of the questions here. And Mark, I'm going to let you guide those things, and then we'll get into this stuff.
Great. Thank you, Jim. So again, real quick, I've been doing the best I can to keep up with some of the Q&A. Really great questions, so thank you for engaging. So obviously, for folks that are online, clearly many of you have figured this out. But if you look at the little panel, you should have one that says questions. It's under audio, dashboard, polls. One of those is questions. If you click on that, you can type in a question, which will pop up here. And either I will try to answer it real time, or we can pose it to the group. Either way, I just couldn't keep up, which was awesome. So we'll pose some of these to the group. If you're on the phone, or not dialed in, or not logged in, excuse me, to the conference, then feel free to send me an email. Again, my email address is mag@phicapsi.com. And I've gotten a couple of those, so I'm trying to keep up with those as well. Lastly, I know I've gotten a number of emails about the slide presentation. Apparently, because we were sending it to so many people, it just took a while to actually get pushed out through our server. So anyways, it should be out there. So ping me if you don't have it, say, in the next 15, 20 minutes. I know it's a little bit late, but folks may still want to reference it. And certainly for the recording, we will make sure that is posted and available. And my understanding is that we'll also have the slides to go along with the audio. So if you want to re-listen to this wonderful conversation or send it to somebody else to listen to, that should be available. So with that out of the way, what I thought I would do is just, I ran out of capacity here to keep answering, which was a great problem to have. So really appreciate the engagement. Why don't we start? There's a few that I thought might deserve a little bit more robust of an answer versus what I could just type in a few words. I'm just going to kind of start at the top here. There was a question around where do campus and chapter social norms fit within Phi Kappa Psi's model and where we're going, basically, is what I believe. So I don't know, Jim or Shannon, did one of you want to address that? Because I think it does get to the heart of a good core challenge that we face, because we do not exist in a vacuum on these campuses, right?
No, and I saw that this question from Evan Englander. That's a totally fair question, and I'm going to try to extrapolate what Evan I think is asking, and if I missed it, Evan, by all means, weigh in and redirect me. But there's no question that every chapter, mine included at Washington Alpha, has kind of an independent history and an independent existence from a national, all size fits all type approach. And I know that's true of every one of your campuses and your chapters as well. University of Washington is significantly different than, Florida State, for example. So I very much value that. And no one's trying to pave over the uniqueness and the special aspects that make your chapter unique and different and maybe exceptional. But I can't use that as a camouflage for things that are happening within the realm of a lot of our chapters that we all know about. For those of us that are close to undergraduates, are not dumb enough to think they aren't doing things that are more risky than they should be. And that's where we have to try to control it. We're never going to perfect this, and I'm not trying to think we can. But it's eliminating the Lord of the Flies mindset that takes over too many chapters and leads to some very dangerous and in some cases deadly decision making. They don't set out to do that. Everybody knows that. But it happens. And we have to work as adults that are working with young men to make sure that they do things wisely and smartly. Keep the bowling ball within the lanes and out of the gutters, right? And that is, those of us that have been advisors for a long time know, it's new to them every single year because their population base changes. It's not new to us because some of us have been talking about this for 30 years or more. So we have to keep it fresh. We have to keep it new. We have to keep it attentive to their world and help them understand how to make the right decisions. And I'll never forget, I'll use this as my final soapbox. I'll never forget going to a chapter meeting at Washington Alpha, and this would probably have been about 1998 or 1999, and undergraduates going around and passing the gavel at the end of the meeting and talking about remarks for the good of the fraternity. And one young man stood up and talked about the party that they'd had on Saturday night and that he had blacked out at 8:30 p.m. or something. And I had no idea what he was talking about. I had never heard the term blacked out before. And I came to find out later that that actually was a goal of the undergraduates at Washington Alpha. They actually tried to get so intoxicated as early as they possibly could that they flat passed out and couldn't remember what happened after whatever time, and it was a bragging right to see how fast you could get there, right? That is not a social norm or a campus norm, right? That is a risk problem that we as adults need to de-risk. And it does require us to make some very difficult decisions to de-risk that, right? And it, even if it's not popular, it's still the right thing to do. So that's where we're going with some of these things.
Great.
Mark?
Thank you, Jim. I'm going to try to give folks, give as many different people opportunity to ask questions. However, this is another one from Evan, and it does get to something that we are talking about. And so I'm going to go ahead and give him a second shot here. But the question was, has headquarters considered a regional volunteer governance structure similar to the one that SIGEP has in place? And this goes to the heart of part of the conversation that we touched upon at our meeting in December. But I don't know, Jim or Shannon, if you'd like to elaborate a little bit on the current thinking and where we may go with that.
Yeah, Shannon, go ahead.
Okay. Yes, is the short answer. I do think that we need to have we have some very good chapter advisors that I think we could help utilize them in some chapters that maybe are weak in that area and alumni support. So we absolutely are. One of the things that I know a number of the larger chapters have either done or are considering is hiring a full-time paid chapter advisor for their chapter, in addition to a house mother, but a full-time chapter advisor to provide additional oversight over the operations of the chapter. And I know that's not necessarily an answer for every chapter, but I do think that for some of our larger chapters, I think it's a solution that I would encourage you to consider. And if anybody wants to talk about it, well, we do it at my chapter. And so I would be glad to talk to you about how we do it and the mistakes we've made and the things that I think we've done pretty well. But one of the other things I think that we've found too is that obviously the larger the chapter, the more difficult it is to manage and your risk increases. So it's a good way to help try to mitigate your risk.
Yep. Alex LaRoche had asked a really good question, and it's, what's the D&O coverage look like for chapter advisors? What's the insurance coverage? It's there, no doubt. Smartly. One of the things I personally believe is that the concept of advising, having been a chapter advisor, is significantly different now than it was even 10 years ago, certainly 20 years ago. Partly because the expectations that are being placed out there by host institutions, by the insurance carriers, by the regulatory environment in which we function, both at the campus level and the legislative level, and maybe even by the fraternity, frankly, demands that we're more engaged as advisors, better trained, better educated, smarter, more informed about what's happening, and given a skill set to manage around that. And we got to build out the teams. We've talked about that. We've been working on that for several years of chapter advisory teams. These aren't new concepts. We didn't invent them, but really trying very hard to populate those and build into the certification, the accreditation. Those, I think, are really wise defense mechanisms to litigation. What have you done to train your folks to fill in the blank? And you have to be able to answer that question. God fear the answer is nothing, which is where we were 3-4 years ago. That isn't going to pass muster under, certainly with grand juries, right? And so that's a part of this process. And the insurance carriers, I think, are going to set some guidelines to what they expect. I also believe that you're going to see coming out of this meeting with these university presidents, it's already a part of the Penn State model, full-time advisors, paid full-time advisors. Is that going to happen in Ohio State, Michigan, Iowa, Illinois? I don't know. It's not going to surprise me when it does. And we're not ready for that. Right? And that's a cost. Where's the money come from? It's another cost to the students, probably. But that's part of this sea shift we're seeing, and we've got to be ready to address.
Yep. So there was another question later on, and I'm kind of perusing them here, but just to kind of tack on to this, there was a question down the ways from Brother James Grove that talks a little bit, and it mentions the house mothers and whatnot, but it also talks a little bit about how students have changed. And that's actually something that's struck me quite substantially in the time that I've been in this role now for a little over 2 years. And just talking to even some of these folks just a couple, you know, just a few days ago with regard to, you know, from the IFC presidents. And they're definitely, I do believe there has been a cultural shift. I think personally, this is my personal opinion, a lot of that's been driven by social media, where folks are more focused on what others think of them versus thinking of others. And I do think that is a cultural challenge, headwind, I'm not even sure what to call it, that we as Greek organizations do, in fact, need to give some thought to and think about how do we try to help folks through that transition as folks maybe come to university with a different levels of self-sustainability, I guess, than folks had 30, 40 years ago. So I do think there is a much broader challenge here that we're trying to tackle for our young men that goes beyond just fraternity life, Greek life, or even university life. I think there is a cultural challenge here. Great. So let me see. There was a specific question Brother Schwitzgabel asked about how many chapters are actually following the fraternity education program to the letter. I'll take that one. The short answer off the top of my head is I'm not sure. But part of what the Executive Council was doing at that emergency meeting in December was to reinstate not reinstate, but to basically reaffirm is the word I was looking for, the need to actually adhere to that 6 weeks, essentially 6 weeks plus one to get through that process. There's a lot of chapters for various reasons, some of them good, some of them questionable, that tend to go way over that period or not adhere to it as well. And so we're working through that. That was part of what they were, why the decision was made to direct chapters to initiate by a certain time. And then for this term, and then we're working through what would be a longer term process and corresponding policies to solidify that, to make that sustainable long term. So hopefully that addresses that. I don't know, Jim or Shannon, if you had anything else you wanted to add to my response to that.
I see that there was one question about why would it be acceptable to wait until the beginning of the spring for the fall semester?
Yes.
It should be 7 weeks for both fall and spring. And I agree with you. What we are talking about in that instance, though, are any pledges that were pledged in the fall of 2017 that have still not been initiated, and our directive is they need to be initiated as soon as you get back from school to school. We will have further dialogue about what pledging looks like going forward beyond this spring. So certainly, at a bare minimum in my mind, we need to be very vigilant about the seven weeks, regardless of when someone pledges.
Yep. Let's see. Sorry, I'm just popping up here from Brother Slayton. Can we get some additional guidance on implementation of the specific rules? Some ambiguity. I'll take a first crack at that. So yes, there is some ambiguity. I'm not sure what else to tell you. Again, the intent here is that we're trying to navigate through this for this first, for this immediate term, after which we will come up with some greater, some processes and policies that are more sustainable and more clear. At this point, what I've been coaching folks is, if there's a question, reach out. We are all here to help you guys navigate through this best you can. I've had a number of chapters reach out to me on the timing of initiation. You know, one said they've already booked everything for January 17th. I guess technically they were supposed to have it done by the 15th. I don't think 48 hours is going to hurt anything, right? And so we're working through with chapters as best we can. We're answering questions as best we can. You know, at this point, my overarching advice, frankly, and it's a little bit of a cop-out, but not really, is think about what would least likely get you into trouble and start there. Part of what we're seeing is that universities and now state, local, federal governments are taking a much dimmer view of this. And I think somebody else had asked a question earlier. I think I answered in writing, but you know, is this a new issue, or is this an old issue that's just kind of getting more attention? It's an old issue. I mean, look, 30 years ago when I was an undergraduate, we used to drink ridiculous amounts. I think substances were a lot less back then, but the alcohol was there. My chapter did not haze, but there were certainly other chapters that did. So it's been around for years. I think to me, what's the big difference is that everybody has said enough is enough. And through the social media, it becomes very quickly apparent as to who's doing what. And so there's a big, bright spotlight on all of us, not just Phi-Psi, but all Greeks, that we're now being asked and basically told, you got to fix it. And that's not to say there aren't issues. There are plenty of collegiate sports teams, marching bands, that do egregious things and hate. Yep, there are. It's a lot easier to suspend a fraternity than it is to suspend your entire football squad or your entire marching band. It sucks, but that's just kind of where we're at. And so, you know, part of the advice I've been just trying to talk through folks with is just let's try to be as conservative as possible right now as we navigate through this and try to build this out into a sustainable manner. So I don't know, again, a little bit of a pontification, but Jim or Shannon, I don't know if you have anything you want to add.
No, on that point, I think we're good there.
Okay. Let's see.
Mark, real quick, I see a question from Tim Michael, and he's asking about the insurance protections volunteers and chapter officers have.
Yep.
It's a totally fair question, Tim, and yes, the short answer is yes. That is a long conversation to have, and I don't want to poo-poo it, but I think it's worth setting up a separate webinar quickly so the chapter advisors understand exactly what this all means and how the policies fit together, and we can do that and bring in those that are really educated about how our policies function to have that dialogue with advisors. Because, I mean, I respect very much how much the advisors are on the front lines of these issues, right? And it's why, frankly, it's a national organization talking on behalf of the headquarters and what the national organization can do to support our advisors. It's part of the training and part of the education and part of the certification, all that other jazz. We have gotten away from working with our advisors one-to-one, face-to-face, providing advisor trainers and advisor educators that can talk peer-to-peer. That was part of our dialogue in December, and it will continue, because if we're going to ask our advisors to do more and ask our advisors to be, you know, a big part of the solution here, we got to be prepared to invest in that and both time and capital to do this correctly. And Sure, 100%. So, Mark, I just ask us to add that as an action item, to do a separate webinar for the advisors about the insurance and how it functions, and start the dialogue there.
Yep. Wonderful. Let's see, where am I at? So, Brother Campos asks a question about statistics that break down which group of undergraduates, such as freshmen or whatnot, are more likely to be victims. And if so, has there been any discussions at the NIC level to prohibit this group from joining fraternities? I'm happy to take a first shot at that. So, new members, pledges, are by far the group that's most likely to be victimized. And the vast majority of new members are freshmen or first semester sophomores. So I would argue that would be the group that's probably most targeted. Certainly NIC, one of its core principles is around freedom of association. And so there is not any discussion at this point around prohibiting those folks from joining. Frankly, they are kind of our core. And so, I think deferred recruitment and whatnot that some universities are looking at is actually something, one of the core principles that the NIC just flat out opposes, because the belief is we should be able to, as individuals, affiliate with any group anywhere at any time that we choose, right, without judgment. So, anyways, that's that question. Let's see. I think we're coming up here on 8:30, so we've been going for about an hour and a half. Jim Shannon, anything? I know there's still a few more questions. Happy to capture those. Is there anything out there that you want to try to address real time here? I'm just kind of trying to peruse this.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of questions here, and I'm happy to stick around and answer them. It's early for me. It's not even 5:30, but we have been going for an hour and a half. Happy to turn this in and just address each one of these as an FAQ, and we can revisit this at a later date, too. This isn't a one-stop dialogue by any stretch of the imagination. I wanted to, in particular, address because there were some decisions that the Executive Council made last month. And the minutes to that meeting will be posted here pretty quickly, probably, within the next 3 or 4 days, once we're back from our meeting this weekend. People can look at those. The informational pieces went out to the advisors and the undergraduate leaders a week and a half ago. And we'll have the ROTs, obviously, over the next several weeks. We're going to do a separate webinar for our chapter leaders so that they're getting this information real time, because a big part of this, obviously, is how are we going to implement these policy changes? How do we work through this? And it's not going to be perfect. We get that. There are going to be wrinkles. We understand. And we'll work to perfect those. The input, frankly, and the ideas and the questions that come from those that are involved in implementing these policy changes, hugely valuable. And I want those things to come forward, because it allows us to do better, which is what we're trying to get at. We work through these things, and there'll be continued dialogue. I think we mentioned earlier a second level conversation, or a second conversation, or see, not necessarily a different level, but a second conversation on these important issues that will occur the Friday before the next Executive Council meeting. I believe that's, Mark, is that the 23rd of February? Is that, do I have that date correct?
Yes, that is correct.
The Friday before our Executive Council meeting, which is at the Executive Council meeting, is a special invite from the hotel hosting us for the GAC. So that will be in Las Vegas, the 23rd, 24th, 25th. Have another dialogue about these very issues. So it's ongoing. And I don't think it's going to, we're not going to solve all this stuff overnight. I get that. But we have to start, and we have to start looking at some of the really important things to de-risk what is happening right now within the walls of some of our organizations. That's what this is really trying to address.
Great. So I'm just kind of cruising through this to see what we've got. You see some folks are starting to drop off because I know it is getting late. So I've seen this question a couple of times, so let me just I think I wrote the answer once, but I'll just verbally state it. It's around, have insurers made any threat against our coverage if we do not make certain changes? As of today, the answer to that is no. In talking with Judd and many of my other peers, that is clearly where insurance companies are going, right? There's going to become a point in time where that's probably, last year we were thinking 7 to 10 years, now we're thinking 2 to 3 years out max, where insurance companies will stop insuring certain activities, certain events, or adding more exclusion clauses to their policies. Obviously for the cases that are costing them the most money, right? And so so while as of today there has been no specific threat, there are rumblings. And so it would only make sense just from a business perspective that they would do that. And the timing for that is probably 18 to 36 months. So again, Jim or Shannon, I don't know if you guys want to talk about that, but that's what I've been hearing from an NIC side as well.
There's a question in here that Anthony Lascaro asks about what are the insurance carriers telling us? That dialogue's still ongoing. A little bit more this weekend because we're meeting with the folks in Tucson, of our other FRMT partners, and that's going to be a part of our conversation. Addressing these issues, and there's certainly a dialogue that when it comes to the fraud-based assertions, there was where that really originated, by the way, there was a member of Kappa Delta Rho fraternity at Penn State who went through recruitment. The website that Penn State had up talking about all the fraternities, KDR in particular, just advertised all the great upsides to joining an organization and all the benefits of KDR at Penn State, and didn't offer any information about its historical performance on that campus. And the KDR National Organization wasn't disclosing any of that information on its website. And so this young man went through recruitment, joined, wasn't told about the past hazing problems that chapter had suffered, and then turned out to be hazed and like it. Based on that, and one of the claims that his lawyers asserted was fraud against Penn State and the local KDR group. And the judge, there was a motion to dismiss it. The judge said, no, that's a claim that can move forward. And of course, the insurance carriers are saying, we're not getting ourselves into a place where we're going to try to offer coverage for fraud or failure to disclose information that is known by an oversight group, whether it's a campus organization like the IFC, or a national organization or a local chapter, we don't cover those losses. So it's a game changer. I don't know that it'll necessarily affect our insurance rates because they'll simply deny coverage. But, you got a real problem if you got the coverage denied for anybody that's involved because they're going to have to foot it on their own. And homeowners policies likely wouldn't cover those losses either. So, it's a big deal. Another one that we're facing.
Yep. There's another question here, slightly different topic, so I'll go ahead and throw it out there from Jim McGrath around, if undergraduate attendance at leadership conferences are so low, why not bring it to a local fraternity and mandate attendance, maybe train chapter advisors and regional people? So that's actually was the philosophy behind our regional officer training that's going to be kicking off literally in 48 hours or so. for the first round. Last year, we trained over 700 folks. This year, it's going to be close to 950 folks. Last year, we did 8 or 9 sites. This year, we're doing 11. So we are trying to get it closer where possible. Unfortunately, it's not possible to do that with every single one of our programs. It would just simply be cost prohibitive. But where possible, we are, in fact, trying to push it towards happening closer to the actual chapters. And that way we can get more of the local alumni in, because clearly without strong alumni support, we're not going to be successful. So that's, I think, another question I'd answered earlier. That's why we really love and appreciate you guys that are sticking in there and helping these chapters through, because your support is so, so critical. But that is what we're trying to do here, is to try to make it local as much as possible.
Okay. You know, Mark, I see a pretty good drop in the number of people that are still online. So my suggestion is going to be that we take the remaining questions, we'll drop those into an FAQ, we'll get answers pieced together for all those, we get those out, we'll answer everybody's questions. If you didn't get one posted to the web, please send it to Mark by email. We may obviously blend similarly based questions to address those issues and get that information out to everybody. And I want the feedback, good, bad, indifferent, ugly. It's important for us to understand what people are thinking about what's going on in the organization. So I want to thank everybody again for their time, for their commitment, certainly for their passion for the organization. I know we all want to be very successful. We want the best for our students, and we want to be happy and pleased with what we're doing. So I can't thank you enough for your time and for what you're doing for the organization. It means a lot to everyone, including me. So my best wishes for a happy new year. And certainly if you have any direct questions for me, my line is open. Please feel free to send them to me by email or telephone, whatever you want to do. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. This will end the conference. The conference will probably stay active for a few more minutes as we do some back office cleanup here and make sure we capture all the recordings. But this will end the conference call for now. Have a great night, everybody. Thank you.